And we are back from the break. A nice little Thanksgiving holiday. Perhaps you got a little bit of Black Friday shopping in. Maybe even some Cyber Monday deals this past Monday. Now we're back at it. The Eagles got a nice big win. We'll see if they're still in the hunt, but it definitely makes next week's game interesting. It was also an interesting week regarding Markelle Fultz and the Sixers. We got some interesting things going on at the Flyers. The Phillies have a few free agents we're looking at, and also covering a little bit of Temple football. I'm Justin-less today, so I am flying high solo, but regardless, send request. Play me in. And welcome back to a very special edition of Flying High. I am without Justin tonight. He had parent-teacher conferences that were rescheduled after that snowstorm up north last week. So this is Flying High, the solo edition. And we're going to do a special Flyers episode coming up either Thursday or Friday, where Justin's going to give you his hot takes on everything going on with the Flyers, getting rid of Hextall and all of that. We're probably going to touch on this Fultz situation as well. And, of course, we'll be looking forward to the Eagles game coming up on Monday night. So today's going to be more of a brief just recap of what happened over this Thanksgiving weekend. Keep it nice and relaxed as we get over our lethargic feeling of eating too much turkey, drinking too much beer, milkshakes, whatever, lots of pie. So getting back into things, getting back into health and Philadelphia sports. The Eagles picked up a much-needed victory this past Sunday, beating the Giants 25-22. Just a few things to touch on with this. We pick up a much-needed win, and it came off of a tale of two halves once again. This seems to be a common theme every week. Start lethargic, start slow, and then build up a little bit momentum in the second half. They've fallen short a lot of times when they go that way. But this week, the Eagles pulled it off. Looking at the first half, it's just time of possession. The Giants controlled the game, 1705 to 1255 total yards. The Giants absolutely destroy us, 346 to 159. They're killing us on the ground, getting 110. That's all Saquon. Somehow, Eli managed to get 236 through the air. And we go in at halftime. We are down 19-11, and only thanks to a late touchdown pass with a minute and 4 seconds to Zach Ertz following the Saquon Barkley 51-yard run. It could have been a 19-18 or 19 game if Jason Kelce doesn't hold on the 52-yard or however long it was touchdown run that was called back on Josh Adams. But I think the Eagles actually woke up in the second half. Now it's way too early to say we're looking at like a really strong playoff team, but we're in the NFC East, folks. We are in the NFC East. It is a weak division, and I saw some fight out of the Eagles in that second half that I never lost complete hope. Like I was telling Justin, there's always a part of me that just believes that we are still in it, especially with the division we're in. Watching that Redskins-Cowboys game, yes, it was exciting, but neither team really impressed me that much. And I know the Eagles are working with a lot of injuries. So if it's really about roughing out the storm or toughing out the storm at this point and just trying to get enough wins and stay relevant until we can get more players back and healthy. Running the ball was actually a thing, and we've been harping on this all year. Don't run it enough. A running back can't get into a rhythm without at least 15 to 20 carries. Josh Adams finally gets the chance to carry the ball 22 times. He gets 84 yards, which is 3.8 per carry, but he has that long run called back. So imagine if that's on the stat sheet as well. He's going for 100 yards. He's got a big touchdown, and he really just showed up. The offensive line looked really solid during that running the second half onslaught of running. And, you know, I'm Corey Clement, he showed some flashes again, and it's a little bit frustrating when he shows these kind of flashes and you're like, where were these? But once again, they weren't running the ball. The face mask call that was not called against him was absolutely absurd. There's no way that official should have a job if they are so lazy to see that, yes, first the defender grabs under the shoulder pad area, but clearly there was a face mask there, so should have had more yards tacked on there. But the only thing that really concerned me about the offense was looking at Carson, and he yes, led a drive to win the game, but I still see weaknesses. I still see poor decision-making. I see a lot of double clutching and overthinking, perhaps, or just the double clutches and holding on to the ball is very frustrating and a little bit frightening. But we got the win, so we're not going to harp on Carson this week. We'll let him go. He did enough to get the win. There was reports out that he was playing on his injury still, and I think that's obvious through the season that he's been playing through the injury. Why they want to make that front and center right now, I don't know. But he's going to keep playing through, and it's clear that he doesn't have everything he had last season, and we might be able to chalk that up to injury, but it's also apparent that he's not making the right decisions every play, and he's making a lot of questionable decisions. But to get enough to get the win, that's all that matters at this point. So we're going into next week with hopes that Carson will show up on Monday night. Schwartz actually adjusted this week, which was really nice to see Jim Schwartz. I saw that Malcolm Jenkins and some of the veterans were requesting that Jim Schwartz simplify the defense because they were playing. The defense was filled with just young guys who have never played before, and simplifying it led to better success. And the D-line brought some more pressure, but it also leads you to think, what on earth was Pat Shurmur even thinking in that second half? How Saquon Barkley goes off in the first half, and then you just see nothing out of him in the second. It's definitely questionable. Were they tanking? I don't know, but it kind of looked like they were tanking, because if you weren't tanking, you would probably run Saquon Barkley more than a few carries and basically no yards, no presence whatsoever in that second half. But that's the Eagles. They're playing the Redskins this Monday night. Me and Justin will cover that. I'm sorry. We'll cover that on Thursday or Friday, whenever that episode comes out. We'll focus more on looking forward and what the Birds need to become the division leaders once again. So we're going to transition to Temple football real quickly. Temple had a phenomenal weekend. They were playing UConn, so that's not really saying much, but they pulled off the 57-7 victory. They finished the season off at 8-4, 7-1 in the conference. They're in second place just behind UCF. So this is actually the winningest class in the history of Temple football. So that's a really exciting that Temple football just keeps getting better. Back when they had PJ Walker and that crew, I think that Notre Dame season was probably the best team I had ever seen at Temple. But they followed it up very solid over the next few seasons. And really, if they don't lose those games to Nova and Buffalo, they're borderline ranked and they're in a really good position for a good bowl game. However, they did not win those games. And for some reason, the committee has Cincinnati over Temple. So Temple is currently lined up for a bowl game, possibly against Vanderbilt in the Birmingham Bowl on December 22nd. It would be nice to play an SEC team, no doubt about that. But I think Temple's clearly the better team than Cincinnati. They showed it in their game where they played against each other, and then they showed it in how they competed against UCF, a lot stronger than Cincinnati did. Cincinnati slated to be in that military bowl game that is on December 29th. Maybe I'm just a little bit bitter because I want to see Temple football in Annapolis, and that's closer to home so I could go to the game. But nonetheless, phenomenal season. Coach Collins really came back strong after those first two games. Newtile played in this past week. Russo was out with injury, so hopefully he'll get all better in time for the bowl game, and it was nice to give Frankie Neuthal one last shot at the helm. So Temple football looks good. Penn State football beats down Maryland 38-3. They're lined up for a New Year's Six Bowl on December 29th at the Peach Bowl against Florida. And Villanova, who beat Temple in that first game of the season, that hurts so bad right now as we look. Nova fails to make the FCS playoffs, capping off just a disastrous letdown of a season for the Wildcats. I'm going to go right into it. The Philly Pros, my boys from Temple, who are in the NFL right now, they had a pretty big week. Robbie Anderson starting us off with the Jets losing at home to the Patriots 27-13. He had two catches and 22 yards. Sean Chandler in the game at Philadelphia returning home to the Link. They go down 25-22 to the Birds, but he has two tackles. Deion Dawkins, who I don't always mention in Philly Pros, I've actually never mentioned him before, offensive lineman for Buffalo. He's playing, folks. I saw him in the game in that brawl. He wasn't in the brawl, but he is playing for Buffalo, so I'll be sure to mention. Deion Dawkins doesn't get any stats online, but he is playing football. Sharif Finch, Tennessee at Houston. They lost last night 34-17, but Sharif had three tackles. Matt Ioannidis in that Washington game. They lost 31-23 on Thanksgiving. Matty had one tackle. Keith Kirkwood also on Thanksgiving of the Saints against Atlanta. They won 31-17. Keith Kirkwood, one reception, 5 yards, and his first career touchdown. One of many to come, Keith. You have a bright future coming. Brandon McManus, he is a Super Bowl champ of the Denver Broncos. They beat Pittsburgh 24-17. He's 1-for-1 from field goal, 3-from-3 from extra point. Hassan Reddick, Arizona, crushed by the Chargers, but Hassan got 8 tackles in the 45-10 loss. Julian Taylor of San Francisco getting some snaps in at Tampa Bay. 2 tackles, and Tahir Whitehead closing us out. 14 tackles, 1 pass deflection in their 34-17 loss at Baltimore. So we're going to move on to the Sixers now. Like I said, it's going to be a brief episode. We're moving along fast tonight. We'll see if I can keep it under 20 minutes. Markel Fultz timeline for the week. This is what we're going to cover for now. And I'm sure Justin and I will go over this because there is so much to break down. I am just going to give you what happened over this week. On Tuesday, David Aldridge reports that Fultz's lawyer advises him to see a shoulder specialist and sit out all basketball activity. So essentially Tuesday, Markel is out. The city erupts. They think this is it. He is the team seems to not have any knowledge that he's still injured. So there's so much confusion going on, and it just gets crazier. On Wednesday, The Athletic releases a report with more info on his shoulder, additional info about a wrist injury, and claims that sources say Fultz prefers a fresh start with a change of scenery. But then Woj tweets that Raymond Brothers, Fultz's agent, denies the claim and just wants Markel to get healthy. So there's all this confusion. People are concocting up different stories, and you really don't know what to believe. I don't know if the Sixers know what to believe, because they seem to not know that Fultz is injured, yet Fultz is seeing all these different specialists saying that he is indeed injured. Fast forward even further to Thursday, and not to mention that the fresh change of scenery, who knows? Markel could have actually said that, which is very frustrating because we've all had his back and there have been doubters. But for the most part, this city watches some of the immensely borderline hideous things that he does and situations that he puts himself into. We have his back, and then he just says he wants a change of scenery just like that. You know, ship him out if he actually thinks that. But I really don't know what to believe at this point. Then on Thursday, Fultz is mocked by Amari Cooper. I wrote an article about this that pissed me off. He Snapchats back, "Good shot, boy," and tries to laugh it off. I know he's a Cowboys fan, but I'm not certain he's really laughing that off. He might be hurting on the inside. Go to section 215 if you want to check out my article about that. I was absolutely heated on Thanksgiving about that. Friday, Fultz is on the bench at the game. They lose to Cleveland. And then Saturday, reports surface per Keith Pompey of the Inquirer that Fultz was shopped in the Butler deal and is no longer part of the team's long-term plans. And I'm thinking, what on earth is going on? Brett Brown denies these claims, says they're willing to move forward with Fultz. But how can you think that when all these reports are coming out about sources saying there's going to be trades, and we're just going to have to wait and see. That's really what it's going to be. There was rumors of interest from the Cavs, so maybe shipping Korver, someone over. TJ's been removed from trade talks, so clearly TJ's getting more minutes as Fultz is sitting out. But really don't know what's going on with that situation. I wish I could tell you more, but until something comes out, we might not know. Both sides are giving different stories, and it's just hard to digest them. See if we can come back on Thursday or Friday with more of a prediction as to what's going to happen. I'm sure Justin and I can concoct something that makes sense. It'll be knowledgeable, but at this point, there's no way to definitively say this is what's going to happen. We just don't have the facts. Sixers were also on the court this week, beating the Pelicans 121-120 on Wednesday, losing to the Cavs 121-112 on Friday, their first loss at home, and then they beat Brooklyn on Sunday 127-125, and it's a week after Jimmy Buckets does it in Charlotte. He does it again in Brooklyn with a big step-back three-pointer. The only problem right now is they cannot contain the other team, whether it's a superstar or just a player. Jrue Holiday goes off for 30. Etuan Moore also had 30 in that Pelicans game. Rodney Hood pulls off 25. Colin Sexton, 23. And Jordan Clarkson with 19 in that Cavs game. And then D'Angelo Russell goes off for 38, as well as Spencer Dinwiddie for 31 in the Nets game. So having trouble containing people on defense. Me and Justin will go over that as well. And just to close it out, we're actually coming down to the end of Flying High already. Flying High solo is nice. We get to the point. I'm saving my discussion for Justin just because I like to bounce the ideas off his head and see what he has to say. See if we have the same ideas, different ideas. Really, right now, my mind is at the Eagles are in a good place, but there's did not do enough to convince me that they're a team worthy of making the playoffs. We'll see. If they can come out and keep that strength going for a full game against the Redskins, and especially if the Cowboys go down to the Saints, that'd be great to see. Sixers, I have no idea what to think. I really don't. I'm back and forth with this kid Fultz, but something's got to give. He either has to figure out this injury or be more forthcoming about the injury. The team has to be more forthcoming, which I'm sure they won't be. And if you're going to ship them out, gentlemen, just ship them out and cut ties. Let us move on. Let the process move on to the victory stages. Real quickly, then now you know where I give you a story that you may not have known or may not have been aware of. Just a quick fact. It's 11 years to the day since the murder of Redskins safety Sean Taylor. Taylor was a phenomenal human being, an absolute monster of a player, and he was murdered at a break-in in his house. That is, it was tragic then, and it's still tragic to think about it 11 years later. Rest in peace, Sean Taylor. All right, we've made it. Minute to win it, folks. Let's see if I can do it. And go! The Texans stay hot. Tempers were flaring in Buffalo. The Saints torch the Falcons. Dallas shakes up the NFC East. The Bears roll on Turkey Day. The Seahawks squeeze it out. Browns roll with no love for Hugh Gronk's back. The Bucks roll. Chargers roll. Colts are in the hunt. Broncos steamroll the Steelers. The Pack are out. There's brawling in the Battle of Mississippi. UCF rolls but loses Milton. Oklahoma makes a case. Ohio State sneaking in. Washington over State. Florida rolls. Georgia rolls. Roll Tide. There is no contest there. Clemson rolls. Can they roll the Tide? I don't think so. Seven overtimes. And upset in College Station. Notre Dame squeaks it out. Donaldson to Atlanta. Curry's coming back. Kawhi laughs off at Pop. NASCAR's still a thing. I went 2-1 in fantasy, and I'm pretty sure I did that in like 30 seconds tonight. Thank you, guys. I made it in under 20 minutes. This has been an incredibly brief Flying High solo edition. Tune in later in the week for Justin and I's full kind of, not full episode, but we'll be talking a lot about the Flyers. I'm sure we'll be touching the Markelle Fultz situation, and looking forward to a humongous game on Monday night against the Redskins. Thank you guys so much. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, download the podcast, leave us a nice 5-star review if you like it. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Flying High Pod, and send requests. Play me out. So tell me what I'm like.